actress Gwyneth Paltrow has written a cookbook, comedian Steve Martin has written novels, and it's only a slight exaggeration to say that just about every celebrity has written a children's book. Why do we see so many celebrity book authors, and are any of their books worth reading? Joining us to talk about some of the celebrity books out there, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Amy.
And Melanie Lowers, books page editor at the Cape Cod Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy.
Now, Jill and Melanie have brought in a stack of books, as they always do. But before we start going through the pile, let's talk about why we're seeing so many celebrity books. And is it becoming more common, or is it just something that maybe I'm becoming more aware of as time goes on? Jill?
I don't think that it is becoming that much more common. I think that it has always been a huge attraction. People want to sell books. Publishers want to sell books. People are interested in celebrities. So if you can put together celebrities and publishing, it's a win-win for everybody. But I found an article back in 1996 that was written by Russell Baker in the New York Times, and he's talking specifically about celebrity authors. So this is not a new phenomena. And one of the things he starts out by saying, after paying a soap opera star a million or so to write some novels, the Random House publishing people sued to make her give it back. Said the stuff she turned in wasn't quality and otherwise heaped contumely on her authorial reputation. This turns out to be Joan Collins, who in fact claims that they knew she couldn't write when they hired her. But celebrities authors, as it says in this article, make some of the biggest money in publishing. And again, 1996, that's not because they are masters of prose, but because they are celebrities. Americans love celebrities. When they hear of a new book bearing a celebrity's name, they rush out to buy it right away. Bestseller lists always bulge with celebrity authors. And he has this funny line about Moby Dick where it's fame that does the trick. If Moby Dick had been written by the famous whale who rid the seas of demented old Ahab, it might have been a smash at the bookstore. Alas, its cover bore the name of an unknown scribbler named Melville, and it didn't sell beans. So this is not a new phenomena. And I think that it is really publishers trying to make a dime. This is not to say that celebrities do not occasionally have good books. It's not to say they're not sincere in what they're trying to do, but I have not seen a lot of books. I have to say this was a real challenge, the show, to find something that was really worth talking about, because there is a lot of garbage out there. But in among all the garbage, there's some genuinely interesting books.
I think also because I'm going to be even more cynical on some of this stuff, that it's part of the diversifying a portfolio for a talent. Either the person has a long professional career and is really well known, and we get the tell-all or whatever, or they have the personal freedom at that point to publish something that they really want to see published, regardless of whether anybody was looking for it or not. I think also when people make a lot of money, and there's an enormous amount of money for some of these folks, just money beyond our wildest imaginations, it has to go somewhere. And in my cynical side, it goes into the, you know, the house in the canyons outside of LA, and it goes into the, you know, the spa that they've invested in, or the restaurant, or you were saying, Amy, about, you know, the perfume line. We see these things over and over again. And I think, frankly, what's happened in the last 20 years or so is that publishers have opened the door to us seeing now the book line, and that people are finding this a way to extend careers that would not extend naturally, and to be as self-indulgent, some of them, as they would like to be, and self-indulgent on the public's dime. And I, you know, that's very cynical, but some of the books, I went online just for the fun of it to look up worst celebrity books of the decade, and there were lists all over the place, and amazingly, some of the same names kept popping up, like Paris Hilton, whose book Confessions of an Heiress. I have no idea if it made any money, but it's pure self-indulgence. There's probably not any. If it was any good, it would have shown up as good, and it hasn't. And so the book is probably just self-indulgence all the way through.
Well, on a less cynical note, I often think that some of these folks, though, have, if you look at sort of the memoir or the autobiography, some of them really have an interesting story to tell.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think so. And they have other kinds of stories, too, I think, to tell, and things to say. But you've got to find them amongst, you know, the drivel.
Well, and they're also, it is not easy to publish a book. It is not easy for an unknown person to publish a book. And it is not unusual for writers, any kind of writer, to have another career. Because, of course, in order to support your writing habit, you often need another career.
Job, yes.
And this again, there's a long tradition of this. I brought along a new biography of William Carlos Williams, Something Urgent I Have to Say to You, The Life and Works of William Carlos Williams, who was a brilliant poet, but also was a physician. And I found a section in this book which talks about what the doctoring did for his writing and what the writing did for his doctoring, because he, in fact, was using the two things together. And again, I don't think this is an unusual thing to be doing. What it says here is, Williams felt no dissonance between being a doctor and a writer. His patients, awed by the superhuman tasks a doctor faces, asked him how he found the time to write a poem. He explained that, quote, one occupation complements the other, that they are two parts of a whole, that it is not two jobs at all, that one rests the man when the other fatigues him. Here again, he resembled Chekhov, who famously said, I feel more alert and satisfied with myself when I think I have two occupations instead of one. Medicine is my wife and literature my mistress. So, you know, it is not so unusual to be doing something else and also writing books.
We were talking beforehand that, for example, other examples of that is Wallace Stevens, who had a life in insurance, of all things, and is one of our most famous and beloved poets. And I noticed the other day that Wendell Berry, who just received a Lifetime Achievement Award from Penn, he's been a farmer his entire life. That's how he's made his living in those years when it was probably before Penn saw him and gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award. There was a lifetime, and that lifetime was spent on the farm, which I think is very, very, very interesting.
Right. So do you have, so let's start out going through the piles. Can we start with memoir, since that seems...
Sure.
We can. I've got a couple.
And I got a couple.
Again, there are piles and piles and piles of memoirs. I think both of us tried to find something that actually you might want to read, which is a nice thing to be able to do. And one of the books that I brought is Just Kids by Patti Smith. Now, Patti Smith is known as a rock and roll star, basically. And she also, however, had a career as a poet. I mean, she had published some poems. And her book ended up winning the nonfiction prize for the National Book Award the year it came out. It is a wonderful story of her life, her early years with Robert Mapplethorpe, the photographer. And the two of them were very close. And as it said in the Publisher's Weekly Review, this beautifully crafted love letter to her friend, who died in 1989, functions as a memento mori of a relationship fueled by a passion for art and writing. Smith transports readers to what seem like halcyon days for art and artists in New York as she shares tales of the denizens of Max's Kansas City, the Hotel Chelsea, Scribner's, Brentano's, and Strand bookstores. And because they were hanging out in the Chelsea Hotel, so she also, not only was she working in a lot of bookstores, they also were living in the Chelsea Hotel. So there are stories in here about William Burroughs and Allen Ginsberg and Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Johnny Winter. I mean, it's just a who's who of people that happened to be walking by her door because she was in the right place at the right time. What I also love about this book, you will not be surprised to hear, is that she loves reading and she loves books. And she has a great paragraph early on about her love of the book. And she writes, I was completely smitten by the book. I longed to read them all, and the things I read of produced new yearnings. Perhaps I might go off to Africa and offer my services to Albert Schweitzer, or deck to my coonskin cap and powder horn I might defend the people like Davy Crockett. I could scale the Himalayas and live in a cave spinning a prayer wheel, keeping the earth turning. But the urge to express myself was my strongest desire, and my siblings were my first eager co-conspirators in the harvesting of my imagination. I mean, she can really write a nice sentence, and I think it is that love of books, actually, and the love of the language that makes this memoir work in a way that many celebrity memoirs do not work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have one by Carol Burnett, and I think the basis of that is that we know this person. We've known her for her entire professional life. There's nothing not to like about Carol Burnett. So right off the bat, we know we're talking about a warm human being and also a consummate storyteller, someone who started out on the stage in front of a live audience and could hold that audience in the palm of their hand. So right off the bat, there's a strong suit here for the ability to do this. And this particular book, and she's written several, it's called Carrie and Me, A Mother-Daughter Love Story. And this is brand new. Carol Burnett is also the author of This Time Together and One More Time. And this is the story of her life with her daughter, Carrie, who was an actress who died of cancer at age 38 in 2002. And the preface says, in late 2000, my daughter, Carrie Hamilton, was working on a story, Sunrise in Memphis, writing in her small Colorado cabin. The story was about a bohemian girl's strange road trip to Elvis's Graceland with a mysterious cowboy. Carrie planned to turn it into a screenplay eventually. Because she felt a kinship with Kate, her main character, Carrie, being a free spirit and somewhat bohemian herself, decided to hit the road and take the same trip for research purposes. And this is a mother-daughter road trip. Carrie is on her way to take this road trip to shape this screenplay when she becomes ill. She becomes ill along the way. And really, it's a very short illness. It's an aggressive cancer. But her mother's on a road trip, too, to go back through the letters that they exchanged during this time. And again, one of the things we have to remember is that there's a whole world that's pre-Facebook. There's a whole world that's pre-texting, where people actually recorded their thoughts in very permanent ways on paper. And so at some point, I think these things are going to change over time. But for now, we do have beautiful letters back and forth. Someone who's full of life, very young, working hard towards career, and then the other person, the parent, who's had the career, who's been on the road that way before, and is seeing it unfold through her own eyes, too. And it's a lovely piece of work. And I think that if for any reason you've liked Carol Burnett in the past, I think you'll like her in print, too.
I like the book. I guess this brings up the question I've always had, too, is that you're saying that Patti Smith, that is a well-written book, and the book by Carol Burnett. Yeah. Do we know that they actually wrote them?
I think that the key on that, and the next book I was going to talk about by Ricky Skaggs, says at the bottom, with Eddie Dean. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's sort of the quiet, sometimes very quiet, sometimes you have to hunt. But that's
that's
the giveaway that there was a co-writer. And so Carol Burnett's book does not have that. Does not surprise me at all that she wrote it.
The thing that I noticed about Patti Smith's book, which actually I thought of, you're talking about the letters, is I believe that she must have kept lots and lots of journals, because she had, I mean, the detail in her book is just, you couldn't sort of remember that.
Right.
So she clearly was keeping detailed, and she actually mentions a diary at some point, but that to me seems like the authentic voice, that a lot of it is being taken directly from her journals over the years. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have the second one I have here is by Ricky Skaggs, as I mentioned. It's called Kentucky Traveler, My Life in Music. Now, I'm not a country western follower, but I do appreciate American music and of any type. And this book is brand new also. It's an autobiography told with the help of a co-writer, Eddie Dean, which I think is fine. It stretches the point a little bit, but I think for a lot of these folks, if writing isn't their primary thing, and the co-writer is just simply there to record the thoughts and stuff, then I can go with that. When Ricky Skaggs was 5 years old, he played the mandolin. And by the time he was 6 years old, he was already working with mandolin virtuoso Bill Monroe, who I do know of. And he was born just about the same time I was. I won't say when that was, but it was a while ago. And for a book like this, I mean, either you love Ricky Skaggs and you really don't want to know what his life was about, but I think the other value of this is looking into somebody else's world that's not your world and finding out where that goes. And for example, he talks about in the very beginning here, somehow we heard that Bill Monroe was coming through Eastern Kentucky. In those days, musicians advertised shows with handbills stuck to electric poles, posters in grocery store windows, and promos on local radio stations. But we're word still traveled fastest by mouth. And word got around Lawrence County that the great Bill Monroe and his Bluegrass Boys were going to play a show at the high school in Martha, just up the road. Now, he goes on to talk about how tiny these places are, that Martha is a little town that's up the road between Blaine and Sandy Hook, Kentucky, but that he lived in a place called Brushy Creek near a village called Cordell. Now, it takes five towns for him to locate where he was in this, and none of them are memorable. None of them are close to any kind of a city. So this is somebody who's come from way, way down into American culture. And his eighth great grandmother was Cherokee. So he's got this mixed background too that adds to the depth of the history, but it's an American history mm-hmm. that he's telling. And so it seemed to me that, that besides the music, that his voice also had this resonance as a voice of someone we wouldn't hear that often on the shelves. And for that reason, I picked it up and kept it.
We're talking celebrity books with Melanie Lowers, books page editor at the Cape Cod Times, and Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library. We'll have more after a short break. And we would love to hear from you. When you see a book written by a celebrity, do you tend to pick it up or walk away? Give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send us an email to thepoint@wgbh.org. And Jill, I know you have another memoir you want to talk about before we move on.
I do have another memoir. And this one was actually brought to my attention by a patron. He came up one day to the reference desk and said, I've got to read another book by Andrew McCarthy. And I'm thinking, Andrew McCarthy? You mean Andrew McCarthy, who was in Pretty in Pink and St. Elmo's Fire, is now an author? Well, it turns out not only is he an author, he has really recreated himself as a travel author specifically. And he is an editor now and writer for National Geographic Traveler and has written many, many travel articles and has also written a memoir. And it is called The Longest Way Home, One Man's Quest for the Courage to Settle Down. It's got a big quote by Elizabeth Gilbert on the front, which I think is one of the things you get when you're a celebrity. You then get celebrity quotes on your book to endorse you, and got a big review in the New York Times. But it really was a very positive review. And one of the lines in the review is saying, one of the things he's talking about in this book is how do we manage to nurture our deepest bonds at the same time that we honor our most necessary solitude? And much of what he's talking about in this memoir are these travels he's taking before he marries his current wife. And so he decides they're engaged, but for about the year before they actually get married, he is hardly ever at home because he decides he really needs to think about what it is to be alone before he can get married. And he's had some troubled marriages before, so he wants to look into that. But he can really do some beautiful writing. He's a well-regarded travel journalist. He's an editor-at-large, is his official title for National Geographic Traveler. And as she says in this review, it's a good book about a good man who's trying good and hard to figure himself out, all the better for us that he needed to do it on the top of Kilimanjaro. So you get a lot of great travel stories in here, as well as that soul searching that he's working on. And you get a little bit about his childhood and how he became an actor and all of the backstory. But basically, it's about the travel.
He's just as cute as he was.
Yeah.
I'm just going to add that, you know.
And let's move on to children's books, because I'm the mother of a 3-year-old, and I have to say, when I go into the bookstore or the library, I often see celebrity book, children's books, and I am one of the people who tends to turn away from those.
So, well, see, that's another category that I think is almost a given for a lot of celebrities. For a while there, it was just, every day, somebody was coming out with a new children's book. And, you know, I tend to get a little more cynical about that myself. I get a lot of children's books across my desk. And I would say that the vast majority of them are fairly co-equal in quality. A good illustrator, a decent plot, a cute storyline, and you have a children's book. Mm-hmm. There's not necessarily a lot of depth in most of them, especially in the storybooks or the picture books. So I think it's on the quality of the book more than the person who did it, because a lot of our local authors here on the Cape who do children's books do beautiful children's books. Very, very high quality work. But a book that was just handed to us here by someone here at the station is a book by Jamie Lee Curtis called Today I Feel Silly and Other Moods That Make My Day, illustrated by Laura Cornell. And, I mean, why not Jamie Lee Curtis? If she can sell yogurt and also be an award-winning actress, she's a very good actress, you know, an intelligent person, then why not? And I think this book is cute from just, you know, quickly looking at it, but it's about moods. And I don't think it's a, you know, I think it's a cute topic to acknowledge that kids have moods and for them to understand that they have moods and their moods come and go. And it's told in rhymes. Today I feel silly. Mom says it's the heat. I put rouge on the cat and gloves on my feet. I ate noodles for breakfast and pancakes at night. I dressed like a star and was quite a sight. Okay. It's yes, cute. I wouldn't bypass that book just because her name was on it.
Although it brings up an interesting point about many, many of these celebrity children's books, which is they have some soapbox they're on and they're trying to pass this along. There's a message. And this is a big part, apparently, I read of celebrity children's books. I read a great article in the Boston Globe about children's books, and they went around interviewing a lot of children's book store owners. Do you put them out? Do you display them? Because part of the problem, of course, with children's books is people think they're very simple to write. And one of the things she says in this article is she says, sorting out good art from bad is always a matter of personal taste, but in contrast to, say, modern sculpture, it's disarmingly easy to test drive a children's book. Take it home and read it out loud. If you're stumbling over words that don't flow, flipping back pages to figure out missing details, skipping over obvious aphorisms that would benumb a three-year-old brain, sharing is good, God loves the USA, puzzling over deus ex machina endings, or just counting pages to figure out how long till it's over, you know you've got a stinker on your hands. And they are suggesting that many of these celebrity books are, in fact, stinkers, and that they carry the burden of being about summer, about something, bullying, disabilities, adoption, death, patriotism, or the importance of enjoying museums at a young age. when they're asked to choose to write a children's book, star authors inevitably talk about doing good, giving back, and getting in touch with their inner child. But she goes on to say, problem is books about something are often crushingly boring. One read wonders that sit on the shelf untouched after the crisis du jour, death of a pet, moving, getting eyeglasses has passed. She refers to something as that many of the author stars appear to suffer from goodnight moon syndrome. You read a children's book a few dozen times. You look down at your own dozing offspring and you think, I could do that. Because of the length, there is a misperception that writing a children's book is easy, says Tomi DePaola. They're short, but they're packed full of stuff. Unlike a novel or nonfiction adult book, picture books are an intertwining of two separate art forms, writing and illustration, each of which should ideally push the other forward. Yeah, right. So this idea that anybody can write, you know, a children's book is silliness, really. But they try, and they try, and they try, and they try. And occasionally, they come out with something worthwhile. John Lithgow, who is sort of the king of celebrity authors because he does it all. He has written a memoir. He has written children's books. He's written party planning books, everything. And actually, there's a lot of quality to the stuff that he writes. But his children's book, the one that I looked at, was called Mahalia Mouse Goes to College. And I have to say, I was not overly impressed with this book, although it's a sweet story and it's about a mouse. And because John Lithgow went to Harvard, this mouse also goes to Harvard. But it turns out, it also comes with a recording. And if you're John Lithgow, you get a recording with your, you know, book. It turns out he actually did this as a part of a commencement speech at Harvard. And the recording in the book is, in fact, the commencement speech at Harvard that he gave, that part of it. And there are words that are completely different from the picture book itself. So this is where things have, you know, fall apart for me. Clearly, somebody's trying to make money and they're not really paying attention.
And there's a self-indulgence there that everything the person says is worthy of print.
Right. And it's not that I don't think John Lithgow isn't a fabulous guy. In fact, one of the things I learned in doing this show is in his book, Drama, An Actor's Education, he too has done a memoir. Not surprisingly, it fell open to the page where he talks about having met his first wife at the College Light Opera Company in Falmouth. So this was news to me, and I was excited to hear that. But you have to be genuine, again, with what you're writing about, and yet hope that somebody's editing and someone's paying attention.
Mm-hmm. We're talking celebrity books with Melanie Lowers, books page editor at the Cape Cod Times, and Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send an email to thepoint@wgbh.org. And I have a listener call out. I'm just curious. If you've read any books by celebrity authors, and do you have any to recommend or thoughts on ones that we should avoid? We'd love to hear from you. Okay, moving on. Do you have another children's book?
I actually have another John Lithgow book, which is in fact also a kid's book, because he clearly has a genuine love of children, I'd say, and also of what families can do together. So he has actually put out a book called The Poet's Corner, the one and only poetry book for the whole family. And again, because you're John Lithgow, on the CD that accompanies this book, you can get all your actor friends to read the poems. So this is one of the benefits of being a celebrity author. And it's actually a great collection of poetry. And it's really thoughtfully done. And a lot of great people read poems on that CD. He's also done the Lithgow Party Paloozas, 52 unexpected ways to make a birthday, holiday, or any day a celebration for kids. And it is essentially exactly that.
It has a kids theme again.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, this could have been the John Lithgow show because he has done so many different kinds of these books. But they're all, you know, they're all of a quality, but they have some holes in them.
Right. Any cookbooks from John Lithgow?
Not yet, yeah. But I would not doubt there's one coming out soon.
Okay, Melanie, cookbooks.
Yes. There are many of them.
Well, the one that's getting a lot of press now, I don't think any of us... you did bring it. But we'll skip. I was going to say you both brought it.
Yeah.
Oh, two books by Gwyneth Paltrow.
Two.
Yes. Okay.
Two.
We won't start with that one. Though.
Okay. Let me just tell you, when I went to the cookbook section, because I knew they were there, I knew that. And a lot of these people, you know, they talk about on their shows and things like that, they talk about food. And food's an important part of all our lives. But the cookbook, I think, is another way, again, to expand the portfolio. And it's an entry point for most people. If they're not going to write prose, they're not old enough to do a memoir, they're not interested in doing a children's book, where do they go? And I think if food was an important part of their family, then the natural inclination is to go to food. So the one that I brought, which has stamped right on the front of it, the New York Times bestseller, you know, for the life of me, I don't know what category that is. But it's by Tricia Yearwood, Georgia Cooking in an Oklahoma Kitchen, Recipes from My Family to Yours. And the reason it's an Oklahoma kitchen is because she and hubby Garth Brooks, who sang together for years and got married in, I believe it was 2005, now live in Oklahoma. And she's from Georgia. So there's your title.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This book came out in 2008, but it's apparently still popular. It's still in print. It's still right out there in the front of the shelves. And I think part of that is that she continues to win awards and she's got a lot of name recognition. And her partnership with Garth Brooks, let's not underestimate that. Garth Brooks is a nationally recognized entertainer. These are people who win every year country music awards, that kind of thing, Grammys, that kind of thing. And but the book itself is somewhat down home. But also, I have to say, this may very well be what she grew up eating. But it's, for the most part, this is not food. This is, how can I put it? This is good country food. Your cardiologist will not necessarily want you eating this good country food, except in small amounts. But it's comfort food at its very, very, very most comforting. I guess I can.
Okay, can you give us an example?
I can put that.
You have to.
Well, it's you know, everything from baked ham with brown sugar, honey glazed. The old-fashioned potato beef casserole, I bet my mother made that because I grew up in Ohio, roast beef and gravy.
You mentioned one off the air. Wasn't there one with mac and cheese and baked beans or something?
Well, it was everything kind of piled up on it. His and her deviled eggs, the pimento cheese spread ball. You know, I mean, there's just, it's food, it's comfort food. It's the food that your grandmother made. You know, homemade banana pudding with meringue. It looks really good. Yeah. But, you know, again, it's of a type. French coconut pie looks deadly, absolutely deadly. And cornbread with buttermilk. There's just a lot of, you know, it's a very heavy kind of cooking. And, but it's a down home kind of thing. And that's the shtick on this book. If you are from a down home place, a transplant anywhere, you're going to gravitate to something like this. And I think also another thing is she looks like a very warm, engaging person on the cover. She's got a cup of coffee. She's got her jeans on. Who wouldn't want to sit down with this person
right,
and have a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, and cook in the kitchen. That mm-hmm. was Paula Deen's whole stock in trade, was not what she was cooking as much as who she was and how she presented it. And I think that's a big thing for celebrity cookbooks. And it works both ways, as we both know with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Right. Well, we do have a caller. So let's, before we get to the next cookbook, we have Louise joining us from Falmouth. Good morning, Louise.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to mention a celebrity book that I enjoyed so much. I read it twice, and I'm, you know, usually a reader of pretty heavy stuff. But this is by Andre Agassi. It's called Open. I don't know mm-hmm. if you're aware of it. It came mm-hmm. out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
And he's the first chapter I found absolutely fascinating, where he describes what he goes through in terms of the pain and all that of getting ready to play, I think what might have been his final Open at the U.S. Open on Long Island. And it's you know, really amazing to read how he got himself ready in spite of all the injuries and stuff that he had had by that time in his career. And then he goes back to his early childhood and what his father put him through to make a champion out of him and so forth. So right. I wanted to recommend that book. I really found it a real page-turner, and as I said, I read it twice.
Well, thanks so much for calling in, and I would say that that's one area that we haven't touched on yet,
that's
the
right.
whole athletes.
Right,
you know,
the sports
right.
memoir.
The sports memoirs.
Yeah, and I know that there have been some very famous ones. Billie Jean King, who, you know, broke barriers. Arthur Ashe, who broke barriers. And then, of course, golfers, baseball players, that kind of thing. I think the closer we get to our own time, you got to sort out the ones, again, that are self-indulgent versus the ones that have a significant story grounded in real life and in American culture.
Mm-hmm.
You want to separate those two out, but it sounds to me like this book that he's written is really an in-depth look at one player's personal sacrifice in order to be the best. And that's the kind of memoir you really want.
Right.
That's right. And that actually got great reviews when that came out. Mm-hmm. I remember when that came out and was very popular. There are, you know, every once in a while, people really, they're genuine in what they're writing about. Yeah. And I think that's one of the great things about that memoir, is that he's being very genuine and very honest and very forthcoming about what he went through to get where he ended up, and that it was a very painful journey for him, but he made it to the other side. So that's one of the great things about that.
You know, you could say the same thing about political memoirs. Almost everyone who runs for public office now writes a book
that's
beforehand.
That's absolutely right.
And
yes.
It's a method of introducing themselves to the public, but only a certain number of them rise to the top. And there's a variety of those. Ronald Reagan wrote one that was very well received. Barack Obama's book, Dreams of My Father, has perpetually been put on lists of must reads, not because of his politics, but because of who he is mm-hmm. and the distance and the difference between his life and his parents' life. That's the kind of thing that you want to look for. It's not necessarily politics are minor in some respects
right,
when it comes to this.
Yeah. Right. Well, we're talking celebrity books with Melanie Lowers, books page editor at the Cape Cod Times, and Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library. We would love to hear from you. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or send an email to thepoint@wgbh.org. And before we went to the break, we had started talking about about Gwyneth Paltrow. She's been in the news a lot lately with because of her latest book.
And one of the interesting things about this particular book, the Gwyneth Paltrow book, is that she is not a celebrity chef. There is a whole nother group of books, of which there are many, 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 which are celebrity chef cookbooks. And they are celebrities because, of course, of the Food Network primarily, and because everybody knows them. And so people come looking for their books because they are written by this celebrity, not because they're necessarily great recipes. The reason I brought Gwyneth's book is because she, in fact, is known for being a different kind of celebrity. She's not known specifically for her cookbooks. She's known for her acting, although she's increasingly gotten interest because of her pushing of whole foods and good foods. And since she has another mother who, once she had children, really wanted to start feeding her children correctly. So this first book that she did is called My Father's Daughter, Delicious Easy Recipes Celebrating Family and Togetherness. And it's no accident that it's called My Father's Daughter, because her father, who had died by the time she wrote this book, was very much a force in her growing up and in her learning how to cook and what you can do as a child cooking. And that runs throughout this book, is how you can get your children involved with cooking. But it's also sort of funny because some of the recipes she has in here, again, she's trying to eat healthy more or less. And one of the ones I found was fried flounder with tartar sauce. And I'm thinking, my mother used to always make fried flounder. I don't remember a recipe being necessary. But, you know, so maybe for some people it would be necessary. She does have a tartar sauce recipe, so perhaps that's the recipe part of this recipe. But in the one of the reviews I read, it talks about how she... It's more than just a cookbook. This feast is part memoir and part tribute, and most important, a celebration of food and family. Paltrow recounts her youth in California and shopping the fresh farmers market with her father. But she also gets a little involved for me, but not for everyone. For example, she has homemade root beer floats. Now, when I hear homemade root beer floats, I'm thinking she's making the ice cream for the root beer float, right? No, she's making the root beer. So she talks a little bit about the recipe. When I was growing up, my dad used to take me to the A&W drive-in for hot dogs and his favorite sweet dessert refreshment on earth, the root beer float. My dad was a root beer man and drilled into me the fine attributes of the soda early in life. It's only when I grew up and read the side of the can that I became disillusioned about enjoying it regularly. I wondered how difficult it would be to make my own organic version, devoid of corn syrup. And so, of course, this is what she sets out to do. And in fact, does it. So if you're looking for an organic root beer float, this is the cookbook for you. And she says she's not much of a baker and she's more about salads, and she does have great salad recipes in here. So a nice choice and very popular, primarily, I think, because it's Gwyneth Paltrow on the cover.
Well, right. I've got the same thing here. I picked up the new version of Gwyneth Paltrow on the cover called It's All Good, Delicious, Easy Recipes That Will Make You Look Good and Feel Great. And of course, she is the picture of health on this cover. And this is brand new, 2013. But on the inside, it says, a year ago, Paltrow nearly passed out from too much work, too much stress, and maybe a bit too much overindulging. Her doctor told her she was anemic, vitamin D deficient, and her adrenal levels were too high. He advised her to go on an elimination diet to clear out her system and heal. This meant no coffee, alcohol, dairy, sugar, shellfish, gluten, or soy, only organic meat, and nothing processed at all. Paltrow, who loves food and cooking, was willing to try this way of eating, but didn't want her meals to be bland and boring. And therefore comes the next cookbook. And all through the cookbook, and it's beautifully done, it's lots of art, instructional pictures, beautiful food photographs, and a lot of pictures of Gwyneth, looking just absolutely, again, as I said, the absolute picture of health and self-possession. The recipes, I think, are a lot more varied. There's a lot of recipes. This is a big book, almost like a coffee table book, and there's probably hundreds of recipes in there. So, you know, I would say that certainly if you're looking to change, make a dietary change, he'd probably do all right with this book. Exactly. I mean, obviously, it's got the backing of, I imagine she can get anybody she wants to tell her exactly what's healthy and not. And the recipes, as I'm putting on my hat as a health editor, they sure look pretty good to me. Yeah. So I think this book, if you're interested in her first book, you might find this one a little more chock full of recipes and less on memoir.
And we have another caller joining us, Liz from Falmouth. Good morning, Liz.
Hi, good morning. This is terrific. I love to hear you talk about books on the show. And I know that this is sort of the undercurrent here. But, you know, one of the things about the celebrity authors is I wish bookstores just had a section that said celebrity authors, easy peasy. It's so easy for them to just, you know, my mother has self-published a children's book. She's 80 years old. She's raised 8 of us. You know, it's so easy for these celebrities, as you just said, to even get the endorsements.
Right,
let alone publish these gorgeous books. And they already have a career. I just like there for writers. You know, so I think it's great that you're looking at these books. You know, and it's certainly, and I think the autobiography is the only exception to that, where that's their story. But, you know, come on, Gwyneth Paltrow. Anyway, you really eat. So anyway, I'm just loving this section, and I'm glad you're putting in, you know, endorsements and plugs for the writers who are struggling every day with, you know, limited resources.
All right. Thanks for the call, Liz.
Yeah, that is actually the downside. I would say that the real downside to celebrity authors is other authors are not getting attention because their books, the celebrity books, just take over the hemisphere. So,
right.
They're going to make money. And again, as you said, right when we were starting out here, the bottom line is, I hate to put it this way, but it's about bottom lines. Publishers want to make money. And these people have right off the bat something that other people don't have, which is name recognition. Although, unfortunately, I'm not a big celebrity watcher, so I had to look up some of these people to find out if I really knew who they were or not. It's just not something that, you know, I'm that interested
well,
in.
Well, let's move on to novels, and there's a name that's very recognizable, I think, on the top of your pile.
There is, and it's Steve Martin, and, you know, let's recall the guy who had the bent arrow around his head on Saturday Night Live, who dressed and walked like an Egyptian. That Steve Martin is still there, I think, probably somewhere, but certainly he's matured into something much else. And this is his third novel, An Object of Beauty, after Shop Girl, and also another book, The Pleasure of My Company. He's a playwright, Picasso at the Lapin Agile, nonfiction, Cruel Shoes, and Born Standing Up, and screenplays for Roxanne, The Jerk, Shop Girl, and many others. Object of Beauty is set in the art world, but it's fiction, and of which he is also an acknowledged expert. Steve Martin is an art expert.
Yeah,
he's also a banjo virtuoso. He's a Renaissance man, I think, in a lot of ways. I think it's okay to use that term, too. But it is fiction, and it's about a young woman who sets out to put a sort of a mystery together. And the interesting thing about the book is, and I think I guess I didn't write this down, there are reproductions of fine art all through the book.
Oh, interesting.
So as she's looking for certain pieces of work, you're talking about certain pieces of work. For example, here it says, people in coats and ties were milling around the Tally Gallery, and on the wall were the minimally rendered still lifes by Giorgio Morandi. And there it is. Still life with wine bottles, Giorgio Morandi, 1957, 12 by 16 inches on the bottom of the page.
He just can't help himself, can
he?
He
cannot. And I think there are 22, they put lush four-color art reproductions. I'm not sure I'd call them lush because of the nature of the paper. But this is a story.
Perhaps it was lush in the hardback.
perhaps it was lush in the hardback. But it's a story. It says, and here's just the beginning of chapter 23. I met Lacey at her apartment. Wet, robed, mouthful of toothpaste, she pointed me the few steps toward the living room and then flitted into the bathroom. I looked around. I had never been in a young woman's quarters that bore the appearance of success. The ones I'd seen looked assembled from hand-me-downs and junk stores. Bedrooms, if I ever made it that far, usually held a lonely futon. Lacey was no longer dragging furniture from her past life into her new one. Her apartment, now furnished in craftsman style with mica lamps and hooked rugs, contradicted its inhabitant, this girl who was barely tame, whose businesslike demeanor was a curtain she closed and opened. okay, I'm in there.
Yeah.
I'm ready to read some more of this book. I would say start at the beginning with Steve Martin's novels, if you're interested, with Shop Girl, which made a huge impression on the book world. I think part of the reason was he was one of the first contemporary celebrities we knew to make a, you know, a New York Times bestseller list legitimately novel, a piece of fiction that had legs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a novel I never from a person I never ever imagined would write a novel. Sidney Poitier has just come out with a novel called Montero Cain, and it is gotten okay reviews. As the Publishers Weekly Review begins, this curious debut novel from the Academy Award-winning actor Poitier is a serviceable corporate thriller with a twist of religion and science fiction added to enliven its feel-good message. And the last line of the review is, for an octogenarian first-time novelist, Poitier has delivered a surprisingly intricate, if idiosyncratic, tale sure to please his many fans. So, I mean, you could talk about faint praise in any case. But I also read a review, not a review, an interview with Sidney Poitier, and he talks about why he wrote this. And so this is one of those cases where he had a genuine reason for wanting to write it. He says, I hope readers come away understanding that the universe is a limitless entity. We must find ways to salvage the yet unborn who are coming our way, our children and great-grandchildren. I would like very much for us to do something by reaching out to avoid self-destruction. If we are going to be useful to the planet, we gotta start now. Now, is that a reason to write a novel? I don't know. It was his reason to write a novel. That does not mean it's a brilliant novel. And what's also interesting about this book at the end is who he thanks. Because who actually wrote this book, I still think might be somewhat under question because, as he himself says, no book is ever the work of one individual. And yes, then he goes on to thank endless numbers of books. You know, such is the case with this one. And then he, thank you, this person and that person. So I think he had a little help, but I think he had a genuine concern. And I think that something like Ted Danson's book on oceans is the same thing. Somebody who has a real passion about what they're writing about. Do I think Ted Danson wrote that book by himself? No, but it is a beautiful book about oceans and about the possible loss of oceans. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, he's using, both of them are using their celebrity platform to
push
an issue. Yeah. And I think that happens a lot with celebrity books.
Well, here's one that obviously has no platform. It has a jiggling Hawaiian dancer on the front. It's Jack Handy's brand new The Stench of Honolulu, a tropical adventure. And Jack Handy is... it's his brand new book. He is the writer for Saturday Night Live who created the deep thoughts spoken by Stuart Smalley and read on television in his yellow shirt and powder blue sweater by the now senator from Wisconsin, I believe, or Minnesota, Al Franken.
Okay.
Remember deep thoughts?
Okay. It's okay, but
you would know them right off the bat. This is a debut novel. He also has his own line of greeting cards from American Greetings. I think this tells you a lot right there. But I think it's really cute. Right off the bat, I was interested. When my friend Don suggested we go on a trip to the South Seas together and offered to pay for the whole thing, I thought, fine, but what's in it for me? After he explained that I'd be getting a free vacation, I still hesitated. It was true that job-wise, I had some time. I had just been fired again. And after working there for nearly 2 months, I was ready for a vacation. But finally, I said no. For one thing, I don't really like the tropics. The last time I went to the Caribbean, I wound up in a bongo factory, forced to make bongos. Okay, light reading, beach reading, fun reading.
But funny.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all.
Okay, well, we're running out of time, and I know we have some self-help books that we want to get to before. Oh, you, Melanie, look like you really want to do this
just
one.
Just please.
Okay.
Michael Palin.
Oh, okay, right.
Michael Palin, comedian, novelist, actor, playwright, and Python. This is his second novel. The first one was called Hemingway's Chair in 1998, and now he has a new novel out called The Truth. And I think that you can't go wrong with Michael Palin. If you saw any of his travelogues on PBS, dry sense of humor, erudite, cosmopolitan, but playful. A lot of fun. Worth it.
Okay. Put that in the pick pile, a very small pick pile that we have. Okay, moving on quickly to self-help.
Yay. Pick up or take a look at The Imperfect Environmentalist by Sarah Gilbert of The Roseanne Show, and also ER 24 and Big Bang Theory. She also has her own show now called The Talk. There's chapters on everything from food and beverage, home, garden, health, beauty, transportation and travel. It's a practical guide to clearing your body, detoxing your home, and saving the earth without losing your mind. It's really cute. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got, you know, thrifting, not just for when you're broke. And then there's a little section called Cut to the Chase, Hippie. What's the least I need to know? Then there's Intriguing. I can handle a little more. I need some facts to bore my friends with. And then How to Do It on the Cheap.
Okay. And quickly mention, before we're out of time, we have less than 30 seconds. You have Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba, Nay, The Honest Life, Living Naturally and True to You. Amazingly, she has a company called The Honest Life.
Okay.
And I see this as one drawn-out commercial.
We'll have a list of all the books we've talked about at our website, capeandislands.org. Thanks a lot, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at the Falmouth Public Library, and Melanie Lowers, books page editor at the Cape Cod Times. I'm Amy Vince, in for Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.